It's September 2nd, 2016. Happy Calendar Adjustment Day. Happy Pierce Your Ears Day. And happy National Blueberry Popsicle Day. Woo-hoo! This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Welcome to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Each week, we check in with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen, on the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. So we took a little break as the new school year got underway. My kids are finally ready and off to school, and I am once again back in the university classroom. Yeah, but it's just freaking great to be back here on Raging Chicken Radio and Out to Coop. Today, we've got the Trump defiles. We got Trump courting the black vote in Philly. What? Taco truck invasion? And to Mexico or not to Mexico? We'll get into that. We'll also get into the district attorney scandal in Philadelphia and photos suggesting there's at least one cop in Philly with white nationalist sympathies. Let's not forget about the strike authorization this week by the faculty at PA State System of Higher Education. All that and so much more right here on Out to Coop Podcast. Remember, Raging Chicken Radio and Out to Coop Podcast is a project of Raging Chicken Press. You can check out all our citizen journalism at RagingChickenPress.org. You can subscribe to Raging Chicken Radio on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and iTunes. Subscribing to Raging Chicken Radio is one of the easiest things that you can do to help support this podcast and all the work that we do with Raging Chicken. And you can keep progressive activist media going strong by becoming a member for as little as $2 a month. Our 2016 membership drive is all about preparing for the next 5 years of pull dough punches, progressive media, and PA. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and click Become a Member under the Support and Membership tab. Or if you're listening on Podbean, just click Become a Patron and you'll be on your way. Be sure to check out all the thank you gifts for each membership level while you are there. And we're looking to bring on some new writers, social media organizers, and tech folks. We'd even take an advertising guy out here, or woman, to build our framework for the next chapter. And if you're interested in helping out, pursuing an internship, or writing or contributing to Raging Chicken Press or Raging Chicken Radio, drop me a line at RagingChickenPress@gmail.com. So it has been a while. It has been a busy couple of weeks. Well, welcome, Sean. Man, it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's nice talking to you again. How's everything been going?
Man, it's just been busy, you know, between all the back to school stuff. I mean, both coming back to university, my kids getting shipped off to school. My daughter started kindergarten for the first time. Got that on the one hand, and then got strike preparations going on the other hand. Woo, man, it's been busy. How about yourself?
Well, I've been working a lot at the brewery over the past few weeks. Nothing really exciting going on. Just been enjoying some of the nice weather it's been out there over the past few days, too.
Yeah, finally. I mean, today is actually, I was walking across campus today and it was like, man, this is one of the most beautiful days we've had in a long time. Humidity is finally broken and, you know, it feels like we're actually might even get a smidgen of fall coming, especially with the remnants of the hurricane coming through over the weekend. That should be a nice washout for Labor Day, but nonetheless, it'll still be a good one. So, you know, I've been so like focused on school stuff and, you know, getting preparations for a possible strike and all this other kind of stuff that, you know, I have not paid as much attention to the news until recently. And I'm like, you know, I said, yeah, I wonder if they finally turned Trump back and see if they turned him and got about a message and like, nope, not a chance. It's like, once again, we have an explosion of the craziness that is Trump this past week. So why don't you walk us through some of this stuff, Sean?
Well, I mean, it seems like he stayed on message for a couple of weeks. You know, he didn't go off the wall, off the reservation. You know, he made a, what you could say was a really nice speech in Mexico in front of the Mexican, with the Mexican president.
Yeah, with the Mexican president that has worse popularity ratings than he does. Yeah, that guy, yeah.
Yeah, just as bad as George W. Bush on the way out.
Exactly.
And then, what? He's coming to Philadelphia to court the black voters in Philadelphia. And as we're recording this right now, there are Black Lives Matter voter or Black Lives Matter protests going on outside of the dining or the hall where he's going to be where he's going to be talking to the people.
Yeah, and I understand that he's you know, up until now, his appeal to black voters has been, what, you know, what could go wrong? Why not just give me a shot? What could you lose? Look how bad things are for you right now already, right?
It's not like they're going to get worse.
No, it's exactly. And it's as first of all, it's like lumping all like everything about black voters into kind of one category, as if the stereotype of like the black ghetto is every black person that's out there, number one, right? And number two, like, as if, like what could go wrong is an actual argument that's going to convince people that, yeah, I'm going to vote for you despite the fact that you've been spouting racism at every place that you go since you started this campaign. I mean, what's going on with this dude?
Yeah, it's just I can't wait for November 7th or November 8th at 10 o'clock once this election's over. You know,
you think it's going to take that long?
And then Trump just goes away. But,
well, he's going to, you know, he'll have that nice little media empire that he's accumulating right now.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. And people have been saying this for a while now, that where he's really positioning himself to do is make something crazier than Fox News, which if you look at it, he's brought on Roger Ailes. He's brought on Breitbart, Steve Bannon, and he's brought on a couple of other people who, hey, that's what he's positioning himself towards. And that's what it looks like he's going to do.
Well, that's exactly what it looks like he's going to do. And I think that, you know, I mean, and people are saying, yeah, but how's that going to rival this? No, he's actually looking very, you know, if you're doing market research, right, as we want to launch something like a media empire like this, and you recognize that there's a good solid 25% of the electorate, right, that have been literally like brought off the civic rails by, a generation now of talk radio and Fox News. And that frankly, Fox News is too liberal for a lot of those folks. You know, he's looking to kind of capture that market segment, you know, and if you got Steve Bannon that's on there, you know, he's been doing this stuff with Breitbart for a long period of time. So it's just, you know, at least it's a very convenient coincidence that he's bringing on all these kind of media folks right at the time where his campaign looks like it's, you know, good luck to it. You know, all the polls right now are showing that, you know, I guess 538 saying that Clinton's got about a 75% chance of winning, 76% chance of winning right now. All the polls are showing a significant kind of defeat for Trump come the fall. And yet still he's out there kind of like preaching his message.
Yep. And one of the things that he's doing so masterfully is what Fox News usually does. They bring on a minority speaker to talk bad about their own subgroup and how bad they are. And then last night we had this guy, I think like Latinos for Trump, who was a Hispanic man. And he basically said that their culture is a dominating culture. And what they're going to do is put taco trucks on every street corner in America. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I can deal with that. Can you?
Yeah, it's like, well, first of all, you think about this. This is the big threat, right? They're talking about taco truck invasion. You know, first of all, I wonder where they got this dude, right? You've got this Latinos for Trump guy come on and make this statement. And this must be some kind of image. You know, I bet you if I spent more time listening to right-wing radio, that this would be one of those tropes that you'd hear over and over and over again, like on Rush Limbaugh and so on. Like somehow the taco truck is the thing that is going to threaten American culture. It's got to be out there somewhere in the kind of right-wing fringe media.
Yeah. I haven't heard about it until yesterday, but hey.
Yeah.
It's like binders full of women. Street corners full of taco trucks.
Exactly. I mean, it's crazy. But okay, so let me ask you this. So it looks like, you know, we're looking at stuff from 538. We're looking at a lot of some of the polls that are out there that are, you know, really show that, you know, Clinton's just going to destroy Trump, especially when we start looking at electoral college stuff. So I'm curious. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but there's a new poll that's just kind of that came out. Let me see when we've got the date for this. This was an IBD tip poll, and it showed that Trump and Clinton are in a virtual tie in this national poll.
Was this the Emerson University poll?
It says this is listed here. This is listed here as IBD tip poll, right? And it basically shows, and especially right now, it's actually shows Clinton at 44 and Trump at 43. But when you add in Johnson and Stein, Johnson's actually polling at 12% in that poll and Stein at 3. And that puts Clinton at 39 and Trump at 39. So I'm curious, you know, what your take is on this.
I'm not really too sure. It doesn't seem like Jill Stein is picking up any leverage, but it seems like a lot of the Republicans who would normally vote for Republican in the in the regular election are going to go for Gary Johnson just because they don't believe in Donald Trump. And these are your independent voters who are not really independent and they voted Republican every election over a lifetime, but they don't like classifying themselves as a Republican voter. So right. That's what I see with that. But there were a few of the other polls that came out this week that that showed the race tightening up.
Mm-hmm.
Especially there's this one by Emerson College. It had, you know, Portman in Ohio up by 15%. And then it had Toomey up by 7%. And I just got to really question some of these polls that are coming out. Especially yeah. how we're getting flooded with some of these polls and how the poll math seems to be pretty skewed when it comes to some of your more Republican leaning polls.
No, exactly. What's interesting here is that, you know, if I'm looking at the polls that the poll I just was talking about there, the one showing tie, that's the one that came out today. Yesterday, there was a series of polls and they ranged from there was three polls. There was one of the Franklin and Marshall polls. There was a USA Today Suffolk poll. They both showed Clinton up by 7 points, right? But at the same day, Rasmussen, which tends to kind of lean towards Republican a little bit, shows Trump up by one. And then you've got this outlier when you basically put Trump, Clinton, Johnson, and Stein. It's one done by quote unquote Metro News. It's showing Trump at plus 18. Which is, but that one's just West. I think that's just the West Virginia poll. And I was even surprised by that. But, you know, what's interesting, I have to wonder how much of this polling that's going on, especially when they're talking about these national polls, how much of this has more to do with the need to keep a particular narrative about a close election alive in the media, basically. Because as we know, our elections in this country, right, are not decided by some raw vote, right? They're decided through kind of electorates in the state-by-state basis. And once you start looking at the Electoral College and looking at some of the races in these kind of key states, that changes a little bit. And I think that accounts to some degree for why we get, you know, on the one hand, a poll that's showing a virtual tie in a four-way race, right, on the one hand. But then if we look over at 538, we have Clinton showing, you know, they're calling it saying 72.7% chance that Clinton is going to win this election by a fairly significant margin.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of these polls. It's like every 4 years we get these polls that are just trying to make it, you know, seem like that dog race narrative that the media wants or the media needs to have. They don't want to be calling an election, you know, in September when the election is basically over at this point.
Yeah.
But like one of the things that now needs to start happening and start focusing on is the down ballot races. Mm-hmm. We just have to see where those are going. It seems like McGuinty is picking up steam.
Mm-hmm.
In Pennsylvania, two more polls came out, the PPP poll, which is a Democratic poll. You know, Daily Coast or like other Democratic groups operate that polling firm. Mm-hmm. And then Franklin and Marshall both showed that McGuinty has grown her lead between likely voters over registered voters. So the registered voters are those who just registered to vote. Likely voters are the ones who are going to go out there and probably will vote. And she's increasing her lead among likely voters in both those polls. It looks like Toomey, I don't know what it is, if he's just that bad of a candidate or people just don't like him, but it mm-hmm. seems like Toomey is in a race where he might lose this seat to a pretty weak candidate.
Right, right. I really hope it happens.
I mean, I guess it tells you a lot about Toomey than and where he stands on issues like the minimum wage and the issues of the Supreme Court justices than Katie McGuinty just not being a solid candidate.
Right, right. Well, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to those down ballot races, especially that we've seen some of the big money on the Republican side, right? The Koch brothers and a whole bunch of associated ones have basically pulled out of the national election altogether, and they're looking at concentrating on some of those down ballot races. And I don't believe that we started to see actually that flood of that money yet.
No, it's going to happen pretty soon.
Yeah, I think it really should too. So I just got done, you know, this is kind of a little kind of connected to this question. And I've been, I don't know if you've heard of this new book that came out, relatively new. It was kind of published earlier this year. But it's this book by David Daley. It's called Rat Fucked. Have you heard of this?
I have actually. I listened to something on NPR about this maybe a month or two ago, but I haven't really dug into it. I know it's about gerrymandering and how they stack the cards. They pretty much took that baseball, statistics approach to things, and
well, it's actually
gerrymandering the districts.
Sort of, right. And so basically what the deal is, and I'm going to do a special edition of the sit down on this. I'm going to do kind of like a back to school book recommendation. I'm going to take some through some of this. But this book is so, I think it's just really critical for anybody who gives like half a crap about democracy to really take a look at this stuff. Because in my mind, we're looking at a scheme like alongside what we saw about the stuff that led up to the financial collapse, right? It was the kind of sophistication that went into Republican plans for gerrymandering that began, as you know, way back in 2006, really took hold after the 2010 elections. But the book is called Rat Fuck, The True Story Behind a Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy. And just so you know, so that term, the only reason I'm saying that term for those people who are a little offended by it, that's actually the title of the book. And that is actually a term, it's an American slang term for political sabotage or dirty tricks. And it's actually a word that these Republican operatives were using as they were going about redrawing the lines. Why I decided to mention that here now was because Pennsylvania was one of the states that was targeted in this whole red map is kind of part of the process, the red map redrawing of lines. And they show that actually their plan was in Pennsylvania, their plan was more successful than many of the other places. The other big one where the plan worked exactly as expected, even better, was also Wisconsin, which, of course, where, you know, we got Scott Walker in the beginning of seeing that playbook to gut unions and defund the public sector. So, I mean, I think so. I'm looking at that. I'm seeing how that is actually going to play and influence out some of these down ballot races. It's good to see we got McGuinty up ahead. But when you start going down even further than that, when you're looking at the PA House and some of these other House races, it looks like that we're, you know, there's no way these folks are going to be changed, are going to be, you know, are going to be elected out.
And one of the things that might happen is that the caucuses within the Pennsylvania legislature are going to get even more divided this year, especially in the House, where you have prominent Republicans retiring, mm-hmm. like Bill Adolph, like Mike Varib from Philadelphia, your southeastern Pennsylvania Republicans. And mm-hmm. they're in seats that, hey, you might flip one or two of those seats around, but there's also a chance that you're going to get you're going to get a more conservative Republican in there than the person who was previously in there. You're definitely going to be seeing this out here in central Pennsylvania, where Pat Vance, who was once a considered more of your moderate Republicans, she was a deal maker. She's now retiring, and the person going to be replacing her is this guy named Mike Regan. Mm-hmm. And he made sure he was sitting front and center at Cumberland Valley once Donald Trump was there visiting a few weeks ago. And yeah. He's one of these people that I think he spoke at the PA Budget and Policy Center because he was one of the only Republicans willing to speak there. And he was just spouting off these crazy right-wing views of how we have to go after waste, fraud, and abuse inside a welfare system that's already very efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there you go. I mean, this is kind of exactly what we're going to get. And I have to say, like, in this book for me just yet another reminder of you know, how smart like the right wing in this country is when it comes to strategy, right? Long-term strategy. And again, a lot of this stuff is completely freaking unethical in so many ways. It's not illegal in most cases, although we see some of those laws that are the redistricting that got pushed through in North Carolina, some of that's being turned back. Some of the voter suppression laws in Wisconsin have been turned back. But still, that red map is going to hold right through 2020. And although the Democrats are now kind of launching this new, you know, attempt to kind of take back things in 2020, you know, there is a real lack of long-term strategic thinking on the left in general. And, you know, I'm reminded of, you know, the 30, now almost 40 years, you know, planning that went in to getting our elections to where they are now. Like, I'm thinking back to the Powell memo and the investment in conservative right-wing organizations, the support of academic intellectuals on the left, support of publications and media, on the right, support of publications and media on the right. And none of that takes place on the left. And it's amazing because you see, you know, the Democrats like to think of themselves as the smart people in the room, but they don't seem to be able to think institutionally and long-term and strategically.
And one of the things I was talking to a legislator about this, a House rep, a Democrat, back in the fall, and I said, especially this was like last winter. This came after the judges won. I was like, this, listen, you know, that election in 2015, electing those three judges to the Pennsylvania court was important because you have to start planning for 2020 right now. Chalk up 2016 and 2018. Okay, right. Step two is to get Governor Wolf reelected in 2018 to reverse the gerrymandering in Pennsylvania. So that's step one right now, is win these elections right now. Step two is to get Wolf reelected in 2018. And step three is to get these maps re-gerrymandered and have a Supreme Court, a liberal Supreme Court, that's actually going to draw maps within your favor. So you can might actually start picking up seats in 2022 and 2024. Like this, that's your game plan right now in Pennsylvania if you're a Democrat. And this is why it's important that we have to have, you know, Hillary Clinton picking the Supreme Court justices, because she's going to be able to pick. She's going to most likely replace Ginsburg, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
She's going to replace Scalia's appointment on the seat. She's going to might replace Clarence Thomas or one or two more judges, where you're going to have a 6-3 liberal court, and they're going to be the ones overturning these laws over the past 20 or 30 years, especially the gerrymandering within the past 5 years.
Right, exactly. And I think that the harsh reality that we're facing, however, though, is that given the way, especially in Pennsylvania, the way that the maps were drawn and how effectively they were drawn to protect, to provide what David Daley talks about as sandbag against any kind of Democratic wave, is that it's highly unlikely that the Democrats are going to make any kind of significant inroads in the House, at least in Pennsylvania. A little bit different for the Senate. And certainly, I don't think we're going to be sending a whole lot of House representatives from Pennsylvania to D.C. That are going to be moderate at all. We're going to see more of that kind of rightward turn, it looks like. So, but we're going to be following this. I mean, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to pay attention to some of the district by district stuff here in Pennsylvania and across the country, too, as well. But to see how these kind of red maps, to see how this gerrymandering stuff is going to play itself out. And as much as it's kind of like, you know, it's fun to watch the presidential election, paying attention to some of this down ballot stuff is going to be really cool. Well, listen, we're coming up to a break, and when we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to talk to Sean a little bit about some stuff down in Philadelphia. We're going to be looking at something that's going on down there with the attorney, district attorney, and some pictures that have emerged about a Philadelphia cop with some seemingly white nationalist tattoos and stuff. But we'll get all into that after the break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
This day in labor history, the year was 1974. That was the day that President Gerald Ford signed the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. The act was passed over growing concern about the mismanagement of private pension plans in the country. In 1963, the Studebaker Corporation closed its auto plant. Its pension plan was a mess. Nearly 7,000 workers received only 15% of their pension or nothing at all. Across the country, more and more workers were relying on private pensions. In 1960, 21.2 million workers had private pensions. By 1970, the numbers stood at 30 million. The funds in those pension plans had nearly tripled in that same decade to $138 billion. Ensuring the security of those pensions was essential for millions of workers and the stability of the economy. At the bill signing, President Ford explained, quote, "Dramatic growth in recent years has thrust private pension plans into a central role in determining how older Americans live in their retirement years. Yet, this same growth in pension plans has brought with it a host of new problems. Many workers have ultimately lost their benefits, even after relatively long service, because when they left jobs, they thereby gave up rights to hard-earned pension benefits. Others have sustained hardships because their companies folded with insufficient funds in the pension plan to pay promised pensions. In addition, some pension funds have been invested primarily for the benefit of the companies or plan administrators, not for the workers. It is essential to bring some order and humanity to this welter of different and sometimes inequitable retirement plans within private industry." President Ford signed the bill on Labor Day and outlined minimum standards for private pensions.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Each week, we take a look at the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. And we get into politics all over the place, folks. So here, once again, with Sean Kitchen. Sean, you brought this to my attention earlier today as kind of as part of my re-emergence from, looking at my feet, making sure that I'm hitting the ground back into the local political scene. Talk about stuff that's going down there with the district attorney in Philadelphia. Fill us in on that a little bit.
So while we were away for the past couple of weeks, District Attorney Seth Williams has been under fire. As you realize, remember, District Attorney Seth Williams brought on a couple of prosecutors from the district, from the Attorney General's office that Kathleen Kane had a public feud with. Mm-hmm. And Kathleen Kane just went to jail because she leaked grand jury testimony that Frank Fina was involved with and a couple of her political enemies from the Philadelphia area. And now it seems like that District Attorney Seth Williams might be the next Philadelphia politician going to jail.
Let me ask you this. Is this also connected to the same investigation around Kane?
This is not. This is actually something that's completely different. Mm-hmm. So the district attorney forgot to file ethics reports over the past 4 years of how many gifts he's received between 2001 and 2015. So while the district attorney was going on vacation, he timed it perfectly. So he filed $165,000 worth of free political gifts from his political partners, from people, donations and shit like that. And he filed this in a way where it would hit the public as he was away on a 2-week vacation. Hmm. So some of these gifts included $11,000 cash from local friends, sideline tickets to Eagles games, some other different types of perks in and around town. And something that was really strikingly odd was a $45,000 roof replacement for his Philadelphia house. And they were talking about this roof replacement because it was, they said it could be exceedingly underestimated. It could be $50,000 or $60,000 for how much money he got in that gift. He basically got that gift from someone who's a New Jersey contractor that's connected to Philadelphia politicians within the General Assembly and within the city itself. Mm-hmm. Another thing that's been that the FBI has been poking around with was that this is actually separate. His wife, his former wife, is renting out a house in Chestnut Hill, mm-hmm. which is a really rich part of the Philadelphia area, the neighborhood. It's valued at $2,500 a month rent. She's getting it for $1,000 a month. So there's some shady things going on within the district attorney's office, and it seems like he might be the next one getting popped by the FBI in Philadelphia.
So are we going to see a trial on this, you think?
Not sure. With working, as you could remember when Bob Ney goes on the Rick Smith show, mm-hmm. there's two things the government have, that's time and money. And if they invest that in you, that means you're not going away. So
very, very interesting.
It's definitely something to keep your eye on, because as this is happening, there is a separate investigation going on with Johnny Dock from the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union. Mm-hmm. He's getting investigated by the FBI for misusing campaign finances and possibly extortion and intimidation with local political races. And as that happened, Philadelphia's Democratic leader, Bob Brady, looks like he's resigning from that position. He didn't state why he's resigning from that position, but the timing's pretty odd, considering that two of your closest confidants are being investigated by the FBI.
Well, look, I mean, yeah, Philadelphia is no stranger to corruption. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, there's been, again, this is a perfect example. You got a city that, has its own version of a Democratic Party machine, and not quite as legendary as what we used to see in Chicago, but
I think it's up there.
Yeah, it's up there, without a doubt.
Yeah.
So, I'm a huge fan of kind of rooting out corruption and rooting out any of this kind of underhanded dealing, because basically what it comes down to in the end, if we don't have the kind of money, and we don't have our politicians who are not serving kind of its people, but are looking to line their own pockets or kind of manipulate the system, then we got to root that stuff out. There's no way around it. So in other Philadelphia news, we've got this picture that you just posted a story on Raging Chicken Press after some pictures emerged in social media about this police officer with what appears to be a white nationalist tattoo. And, you know, in a time when you got Black Lives Matter has been drawing attention to racism within police forces around the country, this can't be good for the Philadelphia Police Department, particularly this guy.
Actually, he might not be facing any punishment for this. So what ended up happening was Tuesday night, a Philadelphia Black Lives Matter activist posted a series of photos online of this cop after he spotted some weird tattoos. On his left forearm, he has what looks to be a party eagle, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know the German translation for it, but that was the eagle that was used under Nazi Germany. You have the Imperial Eagle, which is more of your square eagle with the wings and, mm-hmm. you know, more of like that rectangular or square eagle that's been dated back to the 1200s. The Party Eagle is more rectangular, elongated, and that's only been used in German, only been used by the Germans between 1920 and like 1943, which there was some unsavory folks running the country at that time. I don't know if you yeah. I don't know if you know, but
unsavory.
Yeah,
so, I'll say
the officer in question he had a Flickr account and Instagram account, which both have been deleted at the time. He on his accounts, he has pictures of himself dressed up as an SS Waffenguard doing Nazi reenactments. I don't know of anyone in the United States who does that type of stuff, but that seems kind of odd. And he also names his animals Kipper, which is a slang term for members of the UKIP party, the UK Independence Party, which just pushed Brexit, Panzer, and Rommel. So putting that in mind, his defenders are saying that the eagle is actually part of the German American Police Association. And that eagle actually looks pretty similar to the eagle we're talking about from Nazi Germany. In Philadelphia, there is no, within the police department, there is no regulation showing your tattoos. So that you don't have to cover them up or anything, which, you know, if you see this person at work every day for 5 or 10 years, you might question what's that on his forearm. I'm pretty sure ward leaders might know. And, the mayor finds this deeply disturbing and troubling and wants this addressed by the police department instantly. He's probably not going to lose his job over this, but it will probably push reforms within the police department that officers cannot be showing off their tattoos during work.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. I mean, kudos to the Black Lives Matter activists who put this stuff out, because, you know, it's good to know about this stuff.
And also, ahead of time. May we say, there was the word fatherland written right above his tattoo. So that's also another thing. They're trying to claim there's a group of trolls out there who started a support group for this person on the internet, public group, actually. So they're dumb enough not to make it a secret or private group, who are basically coming up with ways to say this guy's name, basically saying that he's an upstanding character. He's never had an issue with his police record. And he might have been outed by... but he was outed by a hack back in 2010, being a part of this Blood and Honor group, which is a form of Nazi skinhead racist coming out of England that has infiltrated its way into the United States. Because he had his name and badge number. Well, he had Philly, the word Philly, Philly, and his badge number 3511 at yahoo.com was his email address that he was using. And his badge number showed on there was 3511.
Well, there you have it. You know, and I think, you know, even in addition to what we see in that one tattoo, right, on his other arm in that same picture, we should say, was an American flag with an AR-15 assault rifle kind of inlaid over that with the words across the top, God and country. Now, again, that's not as, you know, as much as an issue as the kind of like a white nationalist tattoo. But you put those two things together, right? And you got to wonder, like, is this who we see, you know, are these the folks that are policing the streets of Philadelphia?
Yeah, it makes you question, because one of the things that I learned last year while on the civil rights tour was that the cops were heavily involved with KKK back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And mm-hmm. it seems like we still have that issue today where there's white nationalists and racists within our police departments. And with everything that's been happening with the Black Lives Matter protests, I don't think this would have been a big deal if it wasn't for Black Lives Matter being where it's at today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I have to say, you know, to want to be really clear here is like, you know, one of the reasons why I think stuff like this is important to draw attention to is not to make the argument that, look, all these police officers are the same thing, but rather to say, look, if we care about having fair and good policing in Philadelphia or anywhere across the country, then we cannot allow these outliers to kind of be protected. Right. If you are like racist, right, and anti-Black or affiliated with white nationalist organizations, which are essentially hate organizations, you should not be policing our streets. And to a certain degree, it's going to be up to the police departments, right, to actually root these folks out, to say that, oh, look, to build that connection with the community, saying, no, we do not tolerate with this in our police force. So,
and this wasn't the first time he was outed as a white nationalist. I mean, he was outed 6 years ago as a white nationalist. And there was a rocky record. Did he leave the police force? Did he not leave the police force? It seems like he might have served time as a military. He was a Marine. It looks like he was a private contractor in the Middle East for some time, was back on the force. And then people spotted that tattoo. I mean, if you see that tattoo, you know what Nazi symbolism is. Yeah, you're going to look at it and you're going to notice it right away. What's that doing on that cop's arm? And you're going to tell me that's part of the German American Police Association, which looks exactly like the Nazi eagle that was used back in the 1920s and 30s.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. Well, I'll tell you, everyone, go and check out Sean's article over at Raging Chicken Press. It's kind of dealing with this. And you can see a bunch of links there, too, as well, that are going to take you to some more of this story. And we'll hopefully root this thing out. So the last thing I want to talk about today is like just to remind folks is that this week we have a really kind of potential important vote that's happening among the faculty at the 14 state-owned universities in Pennsylvania, the state system of higher education. One of those universities, Kutztown University, is the university at which I teach. Coming after Labor Day, we'll take the little break for the Labor Day, and then September 7th, 8th, and 9th, faculty from across the state are going to be going about dropping their ballots for a strike authorization vote. The strike authorization vote, if that goes through, and that's a positive vote in favor of a strike authorization, that will grant the authority of the state, our state president, Ken Mash, and the negotiations committee to call a strike and to set a strike date. If I were a betting guy, I would say that we have a fairly strong chance that vote is going to be in the affirmative. Negotiations have gone nowhere for these faculty members, and really, what's at stake, front and center, is whether or not that adjunct faculty members at the state system of higher education are going to be treated as second-class citizens or not, second-class faculty or not. Are we going to sell out 25 to 30% of the faculty and turn them into academic peace workers, right? Or are we going to do that what we have done as a union since their existence is to stand arm in arm with temporary faculty members or adjunct faculty members, pay them on scale with equity, provide benefits and some degree of job security, or is that going to be sent all by the wayside? That's really what's at stake right now. We see this as one more example of a step in the destruction of public higher education in the state. Right now, it pretty much looks like we've got the Pennsylvania chancellor, the chancellor of the state system of higher education, is pretty much going to be the guy who is calling the shots on all of this. Because from what we're hearing, the people who are sitting at the table over at the front, the state system of higher education, they're not really coming out with anything that's significant. They're not interested in doing some negotiation. Somebody's holding these folks back. And I would put my money right there on Frank Brogan, given the fact he's got a long history of being in favor of privatization of education at K-12 level and the higher ed. He was Jeb Bush's lieutenant governor down there in Florida for years, and he's got quite a track record of doing this stuff. So we'll see. So again, that vote is 7th, 8th, and 9th. Shortly after that vote, we're waiting to hear on if and when ABSCUF will be setting a date at which to strike. So quite a lot going on here, Sean.
Yeah, it seems like it's the same issues as last time with the strike fight.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you've got, they're looking to, there was this language that started coming out with the previous chancellor. And at that time, it was pretty clear that the Board of Governors, which is kind of that, you know, the overall Board of Governors, the one who do all the governing, I guess, of the Pennsylvania State System for Higher Education, formerly under the chair of Guido Piccini, who's no longer the chair. He was recently replaced by a Wolf appointee. And but back then, there's this language that emerged about transformation. They wanted to transform the state system of higher education. And really what that means is basically gutting the number of tenure line faculty and trying to kind of turn us back to, not even turn us back to, because we've never really been this, but turn us into the kind of model that we see at other universities where the vast majority of the faculty members are part-time adjuncts getting paid poverty wages. You know, some of the other things that are pretty crazy, and this, again, saw the same pattern as the last contract negotiations. They really want to force distance education on students and faculty members. They want the ability to basically tell a faculty member and tell a student that, no, if you want to take these classes, you have to take those things online. And that's, you know, we don't think that is the best way to go about, you know, delivering the highest quality education possible. But, you know, this is where we are at odds with the corporate minded, you know, governors of the state system of higher education.
Mm-hmm. So I got one question for you. I know, like, last weekend you were out helping students move in. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you were lugging stuff in the dorms with those students and their parents on the first day of moving for all those freshmen. How did the parents seem to respond to the AppScuff stations that were set up throughout the DMZ at Kutztown?
Well, it's interesting. It's actually really interesting. Well, first, a correction. We actually weren't running this stuff up the dorm stairs. That is like that's a student like a run thing. So when we talk to the students about that, they kind of are, you know, much prefer let them handle the lugging up the stuff up the stairs and things like that. You know, we asked them, say, hey, listen, we'll help as much as you want. I said, no,
you got away without moving furniture?
No, we actually ended up helping a lot of families unload stuff out of their car, because the way that it would work, they'd pull up a car and they have to unload everything onto the sidewalk or the grass and then go park their car and wait for someone to come out. And a lot of that was kind of rushed. So, you know, we had a lot of faculty there that were kind of handing out information. And so, you know, we just put down our flyers and just help them unload the cars. I mean, it was great talking. It was great talking to families, especially, you know, first year students coming in with their families. You could see, you know, the excitement and nervousness both on the faces of the students coming in and their family. And, you know, I have to say is that most of the discussions, at least that I had and the other members that were out there had, we didn't get any of these kind of, you know, like, you, I can't believe you're going to do this. All these kind of anti-union rants and that kind of stuff. We didn't hear any of that stuff. We did hear, you know, concern. We heard concern by from students and from their families about, you know, is this strike going to happen? What's that going to mean for my education? And, you know, what the conversations that we kept on having was like, look, we don't want this either. The best thing that we can do right now is actually we're on the same page. So the best thing we could do right now is try to prevent this from ever happening. And, you know, so we had students signing an email list that they're interested in kind of helping out, putting pressure upon the state system officials in order to kind of make sure that, you know, we get a fair contract negotiation. Last night, we had a student information meeting at Kutztown University too as well. We had a pretty good turnout for kind of a Thursday afternoon in the middle of the semester, the first week of school. And, you know, I have to say I was delightful, like, or pleasantly surprised, I have to say, with that these students came to that meeting not just with concerns, they had those, but they were looking for ways to organize. And I think this is, frankly, this is part of the context that we're in right now, that these students have experienced these deep cuts in public higher education in Pennsylvania, and they've seen the impact in their classes. They've seen their tuition go up, and they've seen professors go away for retrenchment, not just here, but at other universities. And so I think that we've turned a kind of corner. And what's also interesting is that you saw in that room some of those students that wanted to help organize, right, and get things going were students that had been working on a Bernie Sanders campaign over the past year. So you're seeing actually some of that carryover from the organizing that went on during the Bernie Sanders campaign actually show up right there in these student info sessions. So that's all good news. And, you know, in my mind, part of a lot of the discussion that we had with students is like, okay, look, Ideally, what we're doing here is not simply, you know, saying, hey, you come help us for our contract, then we're going to go away. Let's build a strong coalition of students and faculty that will go well beyond this contract negotiation. So, you know, as much as the concerns are out there, you know, we've heard some of that from faculty, from parents and their and students. There's a lot of kind of understanding, at least, that something has got to change. And so that was encouraging to hear.
Nice. Now, didn't Ken Marshall send out an email a couple of days ago? I was reading our friend Seth Kahn. Basically, he said blaming the professors and how they're the ones being selfish and greedy in this situation.
Yeah, yeah, that's Ken Marshall. He's gonna do what he's gonna do. You know, we know Pashi's playbook, right? Here's what they're gonna do. I can do Ken Marshall better than Ken Marshall could do Ken Marshall. Okay, it's like he's gonna blame faculty members and say that we're greedy. He's not gonna actually call us greedy. He's just gonna say that we're draining the system because we want more and we're being unreasonable because we don't understand their financial budget stuff. What he's never going to say is that what they're trying to do is basically make classes larger. They're trying to reduce the number of faculty members overall and turn them into kind of part-time adjuncts, which are not going to be available for students when they need them and for extra help, for office hours, for letters of recommendation. They're going to kind of put this in and put us on a course that's going to turn the state system of higher education into a diploma mill, that all they're trying to do is churn out more diplomas so that they can raise more money so they don't have to go to their political bosses and basically say, no, look, we need to kind of support public higher education in this state. The one thing that we all understand, right, is that this system has been bled, right, by Democrats and Republicans alike over 30 years, right? When Tom Corbett came in, he put almost 20% cut, right, in the budget for the state system of higher education, and that had a huge impact. However, when you talk to Chancellor Brogan, when you talk to Ken Marshall, none of them are willing to actually push back at all in the political process. They're more interested in kind of getting on board with their buddies, the anti-public higher education buddies there in the House and the Senate, those kind of Republicans that are talking about Pashi as a communist institution, which is insane, right? And just fan those flames. Look, Ken Marshall is as much a tool of the political process as is Frank Brogan, but they're happy tools. And they love to kind of use us as their kind of whipping boys. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, ultimately, Ken Marshall can say whatever he's going to say, and he's going to. When it comes right down to it, is what's going to matter is faculty organization on the ground. And that's the end all be all. Frankly, without us in the classroom, there is no state system of higher education. We're the ones who defend the quality of what we do. We're the ones who deliver the kind of education that are going to make degrees meaningful over the long run, not Ken Marshall. He's just a highly paid bureaucrat of the state system.
All right. Well, we got your feelings on that.
Yeah, I thought about that for a couple minutes. Yeah. All right. So we're going to come up to another break, folks. We're going to take a quick break and we come back. We're going to close this out, maybe talk a little beer and fun, and we'll kind of get back on track here for Out to Coop Podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism, and frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight.
Bye. Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. So I'm here with Sean Kitchen, and Sean, we're going to close this out. You know, we got Labor Day weekend coming up, a three-day weekend, and it's a Labor Day weekend, which is very, very happy and always excited to celebrate Labor Day. So tell me, what's the news and blues coming out of Pizza Boy?
We released our Haters Tears Goes a couple weeks ago. More of your traditional style goes. A little bit more on the imperial side. It's at 5.4%. Usually a goes comes in between 3 or 5%. Mm-hmm. Not too much higher than that. And boy, is this beer good. It's a hit. It has a nice malty backbone and it has a sourness. And then the salt goes, the saltiness of it just balances everything else out.
Nice, nice. So is this released? You can only get there in crawlers and growlers?
You can only get this in six packs right now. You can get some crawlers, but there's not much draft left. There's not too much cases left either. So if you're in the Harrisburg area, don't expect it to last a weekend, especially with all the beer that's going to be bought for the holiday.
Yeah, well, that's pretty awesome. This is another can release then.
Yes, it is.
Man, it looks like it's a train that is just not going to stop coming out of Pizza Boy.
Yeah, they're going to be canning every 5 weeks. And we got some other good ones coming up pretty soon as well.
That's fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, my plans for Labor Day, right after I leave here, right, I'm kind of doing this from work today because I'm very unhappy to say my whole schedule got completely messed up after one of my classes got canceled. And so what I had planned to be a full studio day and work day for Raging Chicken and for my own projects, that just got shot to hell. So, but I'm here at Kutztown. So I'm going to take a little swing by Saucony Creek. That's a brewery right down the road here in Kutztown. Going to see what they got on tap. Going to bring a growler, home for that. And then when I get home, the Percocet PA, I'm going to stop by Free Will. Free Will is right there in Percocet and going to see what they've got ready for the Labor Day weekend too as well. So I will be sure to report back on that next weekend.
Oh, nice. I was going to tell you, I actually had one of my first Saucony Creek beers on tap the other day.
Oh, what'd you have? Which one?
The Peach Ginger Saison.
Yeah, what'd you think?
Oh, that was really good.
Isn't that nice?
It's not like Saison, like where it's going to be wild or yeasty, but it has like a nice funkiness. It's not overly like grassy like your normal Saison, but I can definitely see why that was an award winner at the GABF.
Yeah, that's a great beer. And I'll tell you, I've had it in bottles, right? Because they bottle that stuff out too as well. It really is worth having it on tap. And it makes it big. I mean, the bottles are good, don't get me wrong. But having it on tap is excellent.
Yeah, it seems like peach is the in flavor right now. We don't have any pumpkin beers on right now. But peach seems like to be the in flavor at the moment. I didn't really get too much of a peach flavor with the Saison. You had to kind of like really dig for it.
Yep.
But that ginger, you get that nice warming feeling with that ginger pop.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that I'm glad you said that about the peach, because I was talking to one of the bartenders over there once about that. I said, well, that's kind of really interesting. I was expecting when I first had it, I was expecting the kind of the peach sweetness to really kind of hit you. But it doesn't. It's really there. Very, very subtle undertones for that. You get some sweetness flavors, but not overly peach. But the ginger does come out. That's for sure.
Yeah, it was really good. It was actually pretty nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, Sean, listen, man, have an awesome Labor Day weekend. You got any plans?
I'll be working.
You'll be working. Excellent. I'm going to be trying to stay dry because it looks like that we've got the remnants of hurricanes kind of coming up the coast. So I wish everybody out there a happy Labor Day. Have a safe and happy Labor Day. And we'll be back next week. Getting back on track here at Raging Chicken Radio, Out the Coop podcast. Sean, take it easy. I'll see you next week.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right. We're out of here. See ya.